Right, welcome back to 95 Unity FM. You're here with Sid, Science with Sid, that's S-Y-D, every Thursday from 3 to 4 p.m. And on the show today, we've got Kit from Aspire for You, and we're going to continue on the topic of sciences and mindsets. So we've just been speaking about how you did food science at uni.
Yes.
Do you want to talk about what that actually involves? So was that all cooking and eating food? Tasting different types of food?
That would be amazing if it purely was that. But no, so basically, food science is a subject type where we are looking at food as a science. So trying to understand the chemical compositions behind some of the things that we're putting in our body, so we understand what the value is, and also then looking at maybe even things like the structure of food, like how can you play around with the shapes to make it a little bit more interesting, help people digest it better. So when you look at things like alphabetic spaghetti, it's actually food scientists that have really figured out what the pasta grain can do and how to make different products from something basic. So if you think about things like chocolate, you're taking, you know, a cocoa product, mixing it with a few things, and then you can make, you know, cubes out of it. You can make different shapes, like Terry's chocolate orange. Thinking about things like soups, you know what I mean? How do we make them thicker? How do we make them thinner? Thinking about even things like cheese strings, you know what I mean? All of these food products, people think just occur, but it's scientists behind it.
So it sounds like it's a science which is very applied. So the application of biology, because you're looking at how the food is going to interact with your body, but also how the food's chemical composition is. So you're looking at it, you're looking at chemistry in a very applied way.
Yeah, fundamentally it's biology, chemistry and physics, and you're literally looking
which element was physics.
Okay, so if we look at the physics of food, we've got to think about things like sound. So believe it or not, in places like McVitie's biscuit factory, one of the ways that they can test the quality of some of their products is about how it sounds when you break it. So the perfect biscuit has a particular sound range.
Wow.
So they call that the study of texture is called rheology, and again, by you making the right sound, you can tell that your product's at the right texture. Things like for cakes, you're thinking about the sponginess and the air.
So going back to the biscuits, so every biscuit,
not every, because if every biscuit was cracked, then you'll have a tub full of cracked biscuits. But you know, when the factories
crack a McVitie's,
yes,
we should have brought one in.
Yeah, yeah, that would be so cool.
It.
Yeah.
If we crack that, then the sound it makes will be similar to another Mac.
Yeah, ideally, that's how. Obviously, it's within a range, but that's one of the ways that they can test the quality. Because
okay.
You know, if
we're
soggy,
have to do a science experiment,
it would be amazing if we did. You know what I mean? If it was too dry, it would make a certain type of sound. So you know,
okay.
And even if you think about things like snap, crackle, and pop, that's again to do with the sound. So again, the science around foods are actually more important than people give them credit
for. They're going to have to get you in to do a science workshop.
Absolutely.
For us at some point.
Absolutely.
About sound. Food.
I'll even tell you, I mean, going back to, like, you know, what you were saying. So, you know, physics becomes very important because of the structure, as we were saying. So thinking about how do we make certain foods stand tall? How do we make them, you know, frozen at the right temperature, but melt just right? So chocolate really cares about melting at the right temperature, especially if you're moving it across hot countries. So chocolate, and that's one of the reasons why chocolate in Spain is different to Britain, which is also different to America.
So they've got a different composition.
Absolutely. You need it because of the temperature. So if you're going to be moving foods across thousands of miles, you want it to be able to stay solid for as long as possible.
So do UK companies not export?
Yeah, well, they do. But that's what
and
I'm saying.
Then they have to make sure
exactly.
that the
and exactly. Okay. And also, you know, things like food trucks and the refrigerators. So again, people don't understand that engineers are the ones that have to make these food freezing, these trucks with food freezers in them. So these are jobs in sciences that people don't normally really think of. When we think of engineering, everyone's thinking about bridge construction and, you know, channel tunnel. Exactly. But you got to think about, you know, who's making the pumps and the valves to help all your favorite liquids move.
Food science sounds like a really interesting career.
It's, I mean, definitely in terms of job choices and also sustainability. If you think about it, everybody eats, you know what I mean? But there's only, you know, you could argue that there's only so many wires you can like lay out for stuff like broadband.
And do people specialize in different types?
Absolutely, yeah, yeah. So going through from the physics, you've also got in terms of sciences being applied, you've got biochemistry involved in there. You've got to think about people like ingredient specialists, nutritionists also count as types of jobs that people can do. in terms of the biochemistry, you're looking at how certain foods or products will react, you know what I mean? Either reaction to light, so understanding how to keep bread lasting longer. That's where some of the chemists come involved. And also, obviously, with biology, we've got to think about, well, how do we stop meat like from spoiling? So this is why they put things like nitrites and such in
and how much of packaging these things that they put in is actually safe for us.
So that's, you know,
you always hear people talking about exactly how, what they're adding is really unsafe.
I think that's
stick with organic food and all the rest of it. So how much of what do you think is unsafe?
I'm gonna go one step before, just in order to kind of contextualize. So I think that the beauty about science is that we're always discovering, and I think that that has a catch 22. So we can always discover the right answer, and we can also discover the wrong answer, and we're only as good as the information we have. So some of the foods that I think have gone wrong in history have literally just been because we didn't know any better. So, and I don't think we'll ever, as long as we keep pushing new boundaries, I don't think we can ever guarantee a food safety every time. I think there will always be one or two occasions where we learn out of bad circumstances. So in terms of certain foods, I think I'd like to think the intentions of the food industry are generally good, in the sense that when they try and preserve the foods, they're using the best chemicals they can that will help keep the food
but
fresh.
Sometimes it's about not knowing what's dangerous. So if we go back and look in history, when x-rays were first discovered, they didn't know the dangers of x-rays, and person discovered x-rays ended up getting cancer.
Exactly.
So it's about not knowing, I think, and I think that's the beauty of science, because it's constantly changing.
Absolutely.
And as things get updated.
Absolutely. And I think
but it's quite scary at the
exactly because when it comes to public health, obviously, you know, not knowing and then mixing that with public health leaves nobody reassured. So, but I just wanted to put that context in to kind of say that some of the things that have been occurring in the food industry aren't intentional, you know what I mean? It's not like people always knew that certain things were bad and then they carried on. Sometimes they didn't know, and then as they do more research, then they found it. Obviously there are some people that were still negligible when they should have done better, when they knew better. So in terms of what's good for us and what's bad for us, I think some of it is just it's always going to occur when you're pushing boundaries. So we know about, you know, certain things about sweeteners, and hopefully you then get government policy, and this is another type of job that people don't know, food policy advisors. So these policy advisors, once they start to get the evidence that something doesn't work for us, they start to take things off the shelf and they start to develop the next alternative. So, you know, food scientists are important in terms of public health, and even in the economy. If you can't keep creating new exciting foods, then nobody buys. If nobody buys, your economy stagnates.
Well, I disagree with the nobody buys.
Okay, or not enough. If not enough people buy, you know, new
but
things.
But I guess it's competition as well. So people have brand loyalty, and they'll want to stick with a particular brand, and if they keep coming up with new ideas,
exactly.
And
like, you know, if you think about Coca-Cola, you know, you've gone from just having Coke to Diet Coke, and now you can get the vanilla. You can get
Coke Zero.
You got the disease. So Coke Zero is an interesting one, which is now Coke Zero apparently almost outsells the normal one. What I mean? Yeah, and again, Coke Zero and
Diet tastes different.
Well,
do they sound different?
Yeah, exactly. That's such an important point. That's a really good point. So yeah, I think that in terms of like the foods that are good for us and bad for us, we're as good as the information we have, and we kind of really need to hope for governments to, you know, protect us where possible. I think the internet's great because it tells you a lot. You can do a lot of research about what's good and what's healthy for you.
But there's a lot of information on there, and people often get confused as to what to believe and whether to completely stick to organic or whether to actually
I think you can't argue with nature. I think there's no scientist on earth that can I'd like to think there's no scientist that would tell you that unnatural things are better than unnatural foods. I think then it's about finding that perfect mix, you know what I mean? So organic foods have their advantages, but some people might not be able to afford them, and likewise, you know, if we look at diets like veganism and all of that, it's always positive for you to eat as many healthy foods as possible. But as humans, we also have a tooth, so we might have to consider certain foods as treats, you know what I mean? So, you know what I mean?
What about yourself?
So after
you've done food science, what's your diet like now? Is there certain foods you stay away from as a result of being a being able to see what actually goes into the foods, that's, or do you still
that's
kind of
a very very good point
it?
Yeah, it's a very very good point. I think for me, definitely in terms of nutritionally, you know, I'm very aware that having a good food mix matters, and I'm also then also aware about how certain foods are made, and I'm aware that, you know, if you've got a food product with a very long shelf life, then it's very likely that there's things in there that, you know what I mean, that are being put in to protect you. And then all you've got is a judgment call, you know what I mean? I think that we've got to recognize that maybe eating one product that might have lots of additives or whatever does not then, you know, dictate an unhealthy lifestyle. It's about balance.
Is there any food that you would say, on
a professional level, not really. I think just me, preferentially, cheese. Like, I'm not really a fan of cheese, and you can imagine the number of food products in the world that have cheese on.
I don't like cheese.
Okay, excellent. Yeah.
I know that everything has cheese in it.
So yeah, I think stuff like that. I think definitely always looking at packaging for a ridiculous number of additives, and I think also being aware of certain foods and fat contents and protein content. So I will look at labels because of.
What do you look for when you look on labels?
So, you know, depending on the type of food, I'm trying to just check that the salt levels aren't too high. Trying to check, you know, is the amount of fat in this food the right number of, like, you know, unsaturated versus saturated fats. Unsaturated fats are better for you. Again,
so
it depends.
That should be higher than the saturated.
Ideally, again, you know what I mean? Like, you need a mix, you know what I mean? Because there's now new research about cholesterol and things like that. So, you know, what you don't want is a high saturated fat diet. But what you also need to consider is that you can't not have, you know, you can't necessarily go through a healthy life by kind of excluding, you know what I mean? So you need that balance, you need that mix. So you can get a good amount of fats from certain types of nuts, which people may not know, but certain, you know, nuts are rich in different types of
exactly.
And then you've got the proteins and things.
I can't remember when the last time I had some seeds, but it's just one of those things.
So yeah, and then, and like I say, in terms of the carbohydrate consumption, we're looking for a good amount of complex carbohydrates. So when you look at things like your Pringles and all of that, those are like the types of snacks that'll leave you hungry very quickly, you know what I mean? They're not necessarily something that you can base a good a day's work on, you know what I mean? You can't necessarily function well and perform well on certain types
sandwiches.
Of snacks. Yeah, and again, even with sandwiches, you know, yeah, nice bread, slow releasing carbs, you know what I mean, and things like that. And I think also with home cooked foods, you can regulate, you can actually measure how much oil you're going to put into something. You know, your portion control's a bit easier, whereas
so
when
you
buy food as much as I can. I think, like, running two businesses means that, if I say two businesses, there's more than that, but nevertheless, like, being busy, it becomes harder. And that's where, like, again, even, you know, this is, I suppose, a little bit irrelevant, but I'm coming across businesses now where they make dishes for busy people, you know what I mean, and also kind of looking at how other people support each other. So I'm aware of certain workplaces that actually different people take the responsibility to cook for each other. So that's quite nice, you know what I mean?
Like,
yeah, but at least you like to trust that they've made it right. Do you know what I mean? In fact, actually, there was a quick one. Like, when I was at school, there was like a teaching assistant that, like, really, really cared about us. And she used to, like, make food for me and stuff like that. It was really nice. Like, it was like having a second mum.
If she didn't like you, then she'd put something that you're allergic to, right?
I imagine, like, she's like, today you're having cheese because you gave the kids too much homework. So yeah.
This was while you were teaching.
Yeah, this was while I was a teaching assistant. Teaching assistant that was like, you know, she's just really supportive of the stuff. So yeah, in terms of like food sciences, it covers biology, chemistry, physics, it covers ethics, it covers things like law. You've got jobs like flavor chemists that people wouldn't know. Exactly. So again,
so
thinking about,
spend the day just testing food.
Yeah, so what's really interesting, again, so this one, obviously I've got to kind of try and recap, but what happens is that all foods and flavors have chemical composition. So when a smell hits your nostrils, you've got your receptors in the nostrils that are able to then interpret things to say, ah, oh, that's strawberry.
Do you think we all smell the same way?
I don't believe so. I think there's evidence.
We don't see
the same way, exactly.
Same.
Yeah, it turns out that apparently women have a better sense of smell than men. Okay. So already you can imagine. And then I think as you get older, I think children's sense of smell is more acute. And then I think as you get older, it's not quite the same.
Going off on a tangent for a bit, talking about smell, I saw a really interesting video on Facebook. I'll try and share it onto my page. It was about how they've done some research into smell and the sweat that we give off when we are scared is different to normal sweat. And they say that people can sense...
You can smell fear. Yeah.
They can sense fear, and that makes them fearful as a result.
Yeah.
Which is interesting.
I think.
We talk about instincts and gut reactions to certain people or certain situations, but we never talk about it in terms of smell.
Absolutely.
So maybe it's a smell that we're picking up when we kind of go, don't like that person.
That instinct, it's very likely. Yeah, that's very, very true. And then it goes back to thinking, well, actually, is there a scientist in all of us? You know what I mean? Like, if
I think we're all natural scientists.
Exactly.
Kids are really natural at being curious and asking the right questions,
comparing,
evaluating. And then we lose that because of how the education system works.
Yeah,
they're kind of taught rather than being allowed to explore.
Yeah, and to free think basically, and also that permission to be wrong, I think, is also an important thing. You know what I mean?
This go kind and of test leads it. Nicely onto mindset.
So. I see what you did there.
Permission to be wrong.
Yeah, a sweet segue. Yeah, so like, you know, at the top of the show, I think you were saying that, you know, my area of interest when it comes to looking at the sciences is really about understanding the mindset that matters, that when whatever career you choose to go into, whatever the types of jobs you want to go into, how you think really matters. And obviously with Aspire for You as a CIC, which means it's a non-profit, we devise programs in communities to help people move forward by mindset, financial literacy or employability. So that then means science learning as well. So we'll work with science organizations or even develop science experiences that will help people just change their minds a little bit about something. Maybe, you know, if it's about mental health, we actually do a program with an organization called Mindful Me, where we're helping people understand the neuroscience behind mental health challenges, depression, anxiety. So we're helping you understand how the brain is composed in order to cause some of these mental health challenges. We've also got another program called Parenting Young People, PYP, and that helps parents understand the psychology of their teenagers. Mm-hmm. So that, and you know, the human brain doesn't develop till around 26 to 30 years old.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
You know,
you're saying it's 30, isn't it, until it stops.
Exactly. So that then makes sense why, you know, your 18-year-old keeps making the same mistake, and why your 24-year-old isn't managing money very well, because there's still parts of their brain that's developing. So for us, we think mindset really, really matters in the context of everything.
So when we talk about mindset, what exactly do we mean by mindset?
It's basically the way that we think. And for me, I've got a personal phrase. What I think the world needs to understand more is why we do what we do in the way that we do it. So I'll repeat that, and then I'll contextualize why we do whatever we do, or whatever we choose to do, in the way that we do it. So two people will look at a problem and they'll go about it in a different way. And that's because that's about their why. Why are they, number one, maybe even looking at the problem? There's some people that see a problem and they choose to walk away. There's some people that see a problem and they want to tackle it.
Let's challenge it.
Yeah. And there are people that will see a problem and will get somebody else to solve it for them. And there are people that will see a problem and they'll spend some time researching it in order to find a solution. There are people that see a problem and they'll just campaign. They'll just tell everybody there's a problem. And
so
they do nothing about it.
Those
are all different types of mindset. So that's the fundamentals. Why do we do whatever we do in the way that we do it?
Do you think there's one right type of mindset, or there's one type of mindset we should all be kind of going for?
This goes back to, you know, what we were saying about stuff like, you know, the food sciences and all of that. Like, and again, in terms of food, like, what's a healthy food? What's not a healthy food? What should you stay away from? Everything's about context and circumstance. You know what I mean? So whatever you're facing, whatever you can do with the resources that you've got to make the best choices you can. My campaign, as it were, is for people to understand that they probably have more choices than they thought. We, like you said, because of the education system, because of where we live, because of maybe what we think money can do for us, we understand that we probably underestimate the ability to be resourceful. We genuinely think there's only one answer. I believe there are more solutions than problems. It's just some solutions are more inconvenient than others. So
some require a bit more effort.
Exactly, a bit more effort, more patience sometimes. Sometimes as well, you know, like, you know, let's think about it. Let's be really honest. A lot of us probably do a lot of what we do in the way that we do it because of our parents. So we probably chose the jobs that we chose because our parents, a grandparent, an uncle or an auntie, we probably feared them judging us, or we wanted to make them happy. So all of a sudden, because we've got that one message in our head, I might not choose the right relationship. I might not choose the right jobs just because I don't want to upset someone. So we need to know why we do what we do in the way that we do it. We need to.
Why does that matter, knowing the reason behind it?
So that's interesting. I think because then you understand how to reverse engineer everything. Because when you know why you're doing it and why you chose that path, you then get that choice of, do I now want to do something different, or am I happy with sticking with it? You know what I mean? And I think that's a form of empowerment. I think by us understanding more of our mindset, we're a lot more empowered. And I think that that's also the avenue to a better world. But we have to understand that a lot of our challenges in life are usually related to humans, whether it's humans that create the policy, humans that choose not to fund certain things. So if we don't understand how other humans work, what are we, how can you fix anything? You know what I mean? So that's why we think it's important.
At the moment in schools, there seems to be a big focus on fixed and growth mindsets.
Yeah.
And it seems to be a big thing at the moment.
Yeah.
So do you want to explain what the differences are between
So them? The theory in terms of like fixed, the fixed mindset philosophy is that we are who we are and nothing changes. Like, you know what I mean? That you can't really evolve, you can't really develop. Mm. That's just your character type. And then some people would say that actually all humans have infinite potential. And you know, like I say, it just takes time, but we can grow beyond whatever the challenges and our limitations are. And it links with whether you think the brain is what they call plastic or fluid again. So again, you know, am I the type of person that can only ever do 2 hours of work without a rest, and then after 2 hours I can't do anything more, or can I actually evolve to do more than 2 hours of work and things like that? So that philosophy is always ongoing, but I think the people that purvey some of those philosophies, I would argue, are not necessarily considering context. And that's what you find with a lot of certain types of science theory and even things like economics. Like, economics will always then say this works, but we've got to forget that, you know, on a Tuesday people might do something differently, and then some people are better in the morning and the afternoon. You almost need to disbelieve certain things for certain theories to work.
Do you think the fixed and the growth mindset, even though it has some value,
yeah,
it needs to be applied to
absolutely
the context,
exactly,
and even then it might not be black and
exactly
white.
And that's the truth about all humans. It's all about our context and a circumstance. Like, literally every decision, two people will make two different decisions if you give them the same scenario, just because of what happened the hour before. The number of times where I've seen really patient people, like, you know, lose their temper because
what
just
if you're
before.
Not patient like me, then?
Well, that's the thing. Well, there'll be days where you are patient. Do you know what I mean?
You're so, like, what's wrong with today?
Yeah, you know what I mean. So I think that's it. Like, you know, I think I'm a growth mindset fan, and I just think it's all about circumstance and experience and exposure. But I think that for us, as you know, in the world of science, we really need to kind of embrace that fact that we're here to learn and just keep learning. I think that in terms of like careers, that we've got to be thinking about, well, it's okay to change careers, and you know, whatever job you want to do, if that's your passion, then it's your passion, but be aware that you don't have to do it because of certain parental pressures. You don't also have to do it because of the social status, because I think it's not said enough that, I mean, I'll be honest, I think there's people I went to uni with that wanted to be more of a doctor because of
the social status,
you know what I mean? They can get a better bride, you know what I mean? And let's be honest, they can kind of appear cooler and all of that. And then there's other people
that get the title doctor,
you know what I mean? And obviously you can, that gets you into every golf club, you know what I mean? And then there's also the fact that you've got to consider maybe even like a kind of that God complex, you know what I mean? People want to feel significance. In psychology, we call it significance, where you want to feel important. But we've got to be aware that some insecurities manifest as this, you know, superiority complex. Mm. So we've got to be really aware why we do what we do in the way that we do it.
You see people change when they get
absolutely
to the point of getting that status, and
exactly,
their personality changes.
Yeah,
the
ego,
they
get cocky.
Yeah, the ego shoots up.
Yeah, and again, you know, going back to what we're saying, you know, like, you know, people talk about growth and fixed mindset and everything, and then people forget, wait a minute, we live in a world of permission, meaning if the person that was marking your first exam chose to be really strict with you, that could have been the difference between A and B. So there was a hidden human that actually helped you get there. It's very rare for a human to get everywhere just with no help.
Yeah.
Then you've got to think about the person that chose to give you a reference, because they could have said no to giving you a reference.
Yeah.
And that lecturer could have not like given you a reference.
It's
and
about
then
being humble and being grateful.
Absolutely. It's about appreciating that other people are probably in the mix. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Who are the people that gave you the right self-esteem? Where did the parents help? Where did all of this happen? You know what I mean? And you can't take it all for granted that it's all all, you know, just self-made. So yeah, I think definitely in terms of the world of sciences and education, mindset really, really matters, and being free to be who we are.
I think that's a nice way to end. Mm-hmm. So your final message in one sentence to any listeners out there, what would it be in terms of science careers and mindset?
Yeah, I think definitely enjoy learning. And I think we should be grateful that we live in 2017 where there are so many more solutions than there are problems.
And you don't have to use a dial-up connection.
You don't have to use a dial-up connection. You know what I mean? Just keep learning, keep experimenting, keep finding out what you want to do. And if you change your mind, that's perfectly okay. And basically, yeah, enjoy your life so that the 70-year-old you is grateful for the things that 16-year-old you has done. If you want to know a little bit about
us,
exactly, yeah. So Aspire for You is Aspire with the number 4 and the letter U.co.uk. So that's Aspire and the number 4, the letter U.co.uk. On Twitter, I'm at Kit Midlands. So that's K-I-T. Sorry, actually, on Twitter, it's Kit Casts. So that's C-A-S. For Sierra TS, and on Instagram and Facebook, it's Kit Midlands, and you can find Aspire for You CIC on all the socials, ASPIRECIC.
Brilliant. So that's Kit from Aspire for You. Thank you for having, thank you for coming in today.
Thank you for having
Science
me.
Science with Sid, brilliant. So that's it for us from Science with Sid. That's SYD. If you want to find us on Facebook, if you just search for Science with Sid. We'll be back again next week on Thursday from 3 to 4 p.m. This is Unity FM 93.5. I'll see you next week.